session number 11202, reel 9.
Mr. Rogers, reel 9. You felt when you got back over the ridge, Mr. Rogers, that the company had been taken by surprise.
Yes.
Were there any other indications of this surprise? Did it show in any way?
No, just that I think the whole battalion had been taken by surprise because the... As I said, I was on guard, and nobody seemed to take any notice of me, and to think that the enemy was anywhere near at all. But when I got over the ridge, they were pretty well prepared because it was a good position that they had when I got over the ridge, and there were plenty of mounds of hills where there was plenty of cover, and they were certainly in action then because. They must have been getting fired upon, and they're small in numbers, but they were making an effort.
Was the battalion dug in?
Well, I can only speak for myself. I couldn't dig in myself because I think I must have been headquarters then, or A echelon. You know, the A echelon and then B echelon, and it must have been A echelon. And my ground was stony ground, and I couldn't dig in at all. So I'd made a pile of stones around my area for my what was going to be my slit trench if it had happened. But we couldn't get dug in. But when we got over the ridge, they were dug in. It was softer there, and the mortar gun. It was in position and in a well dug in position, you see. But the men weren't dug in because they had plenty of cover round the hills. They were behind a set of a mound and the cover was pretty good.
You said that when you got back over the ridge that the officers were in a group and looked as though they were in some form of conference.
Yes.
Did they give any indication there of what they were up to, what they were thinking?
Well, one of them actually come over to me when I got over the ridge and I was sitting there getting my breath back again. And I think it was Major Slight. The name is in my memory anyway, and I think we had a Major Slight. And the colonel wasn't there, and I think he must have been in command. And he come across and he said, what's happening down there? And I told him. He said there were many of them, and of course I was wrapped up in the situation, and I said there was thousands because I had only seen the extended line of German coming up onto us, you see. And he said, oh, that's ridiculous, not that many. I said, well, there's hundreds of them. I said, they're advancing now in extended line underneath that smoke screen. But of course they must have known something then, because he said, well, take up position on the hill. And I took up position, and I got right next to Captain Robinson. We used to call him Mad Robbo. And he was quite brave, and he inspired me at the time, because he was shouting all the time up the Durham, you know, and... you see them lights going up there, they want some ammunition, let them have it, lads, you know. And he even went as far as seeing the blading races, and he was a real inspiration. And a matter of fact, I think it got to me too much, and I took up position on the hill, and the first thing I saw over the hill was a Bren gun, and it's muzzle was pointing to the sky, and there was no one on it, and I knew that I could get that Bren gun working. So I said to the sergeant, there was a sergeant there, I said, I can get that Bren gun working. And he said, if you go across there, he said, you're a dead man. So something must have happened before then, because the man had been on the Bren Gan, he'd either had to leave it or he'd been wounded or something. And he wouldn't hear tell of me going across for it. It wasn't because I was brave, it was just because I was acting as the, in the emergency. And it just went on from there. They were all battling away. He asked for a rifle, I can remember one time. He saw one of the Germans advancing, and he asked for a rifle, and somebody give him a rifle, and there was a hang of a shout down, was down in the dilly, you know, and he must have hit him, and it just went on like that.
Did you find yourself shooting at Germans?
We took up position, and it was a big mound of hill, and I couldn't see. I knew they were there, but you see, if it had been a small mound, you could have gotten your head over and your arms over the top, and you had to look down into the incline, you see. But the mound of the hill was too big, and I just couldn't see. So I stood up, and I fired from the standing position, you see.
Do you recall hitting anyone?
Well, I cannot recall exactly hitting anyone, but there was one German with a great big load of for a machine gun, supply for the machine gun, bullets, you know, for the machine gun, and he was getting too close for to be to be healthy, so I had a go at him, and he went down, which is only natural for any soldier. But I never seen him get up again, so I'd never see whether or not he was hit. But Captain Robinson was shouting that, because at that time then I could see the rest of the companies being walked out, prisoners of war, A Company and B Company. I think there was three of them.
Were these in position in front of you?
They were, yeah, and I thought they weren't. I thought the attacks would have been coming from the other side. I didn't realise, but they were down at the bottom of the incline, and they were all getting taken away.
So you were being attacked by the Germans that had taken them, and they were coming straight through at you?
Yes, I think they must have taken them. I couldn't be sure about this, because when they marched them down in prisoner of war, they might have marched them around another way, but I was looking down the incline, and there they were getting marched across, and the others were the Germans were advancing under the smoke screen, and of course when the smoke screen was lifting we could see them. Well, Captain Robinson had seen that, and he said the people that are leading our men out there are Germans, you know, pick them off. So I had a go, and you know, the old standard lead, they were walking, and taking the old standard lead aim at them, and we fired, but I said to myself, well, this is ridiculous, because when we fired, all the men that were getting taken prisoner of war started to run, you see, and ducking their heads down, and that of the Germans as well. So I said, well, this is ridiculous, because we're going to kill our own men. So after that, we just continued firing in what was coming up. And there was one lad he was lying down, and he said, I cannot see anything from here. I said, well, there's plenty of cover. I said, you know, if you stand up, there's plenty of cover. And I wish I hadn't, because he stood up, and he got a one straight into the temple. And he went down. There was him. He was a old territorial chap. I forget his name, though. But there was two brothers of them in the same battalion. And, of course, he went down. So that position was getting a bit hot. And I moved away and to another position. And as I was passing, I saw the QM. And he was sitting with his back to the hill with the company clerk, which is John Mitchell, very nice lad, too nice to be a soldier, and he'd been with the QM for a long time, and he was nicked, I think it was on his left eye, And he looked a bit pale, and I shouted to him and asked him if he was all right. He said, yes, he said, I'm okay. He said, but Sergeant Luckett is over there. Now, Sergeant Luckett was a sergeant from the Midlands, and we had lots of casualties, you know, with the little bits of things. We'd had air bombings and things like that. And the reinforcements had all come from the Midlands area, Coventry, Dudley, Walsall, and round about there. And there were quite a number of them then in the battalion. And Sergeant Lockhart had been wounded, and it was all his stomach had been hit, in the lower part of his stomach had been hit. And the QM said, will you lift him onto the truck? So I went to him, found out where he was, and there was two chaps, and I said, you take his arms and I'll take his feet. And there was a chap running past, a young soldier, moving about maybe to another position, and I stopped him and I asked him, I said, give it a lift with this sergeant onto the truck. And we started to lift him up, and a motor come across, and I could taste the cordite on my tongue. It was so near, but this lad got took straight away. He took the full blast of the mortar shell, and poor lad, he went down. So I had to get somebody else, and Sergeant Lockett was a big chap, and he was a lovely fella, he was, grandfella. He wouldn't stand on the black look, you know, everybody liked him. So we got him up, and we got him onto the truck. And I don't know how long we went on like that, but somebody somewhere said, if anybody can get out now. And there was a truck, when I heard about this, there was a truck just moving out, whether it was the last truck or not, out of the position. I think all the officers and that would get taken, whether it was the last truck or not, I don't know. But when I heard that, I didn't want to be taken prisoner of war, so I made for this truck, and I got to the back of it. Now, the enemy must have gotten right round the mound of the hill and firing down it, because when I went to get onto the back of the truck, which was moving out very slowly, and the chaps were shouting on the top, you know, and trying to pull me on, the bullets started ricochet around the back of the truck. So I said, well, this was unhealthy. So I went round, held onto the truck, and went round to the other side of the truck. And when I got to the other side of the truck, the same thing happened. They were coming this way. So we must have been absolutely surrounded. Anyway, they pulled me up onto the truck, and the truck was packed. There was no canopy on. It was just a three-ton lorry with the side. And we rode off. And the bullets were hitting the side of this truck. But I couldn't get my left leg down because there were so many in. My left leg was above, and I thought at any time I might get one in the leg. But luckily, nothing happened, and we got out.
And was it an organised retreat, or was it every man for himself?
I think it was just... all I heard was, if any man can get out now. You see, thought they must have been going to give in. All the companies had gone, and I thought perhaps they were just going to give in. So I, when I heard that, and the trucks were going out, I said, well, I don't want to be a prisoner of war. So I hopped onto this truck, and away we went.
Did you witness any other men who inspired those around him, other than Captain Robinson?
No, because I was right next to Captain Robinson, and you see, when these things are going on, you're not taking much notice of what anybody else is doing. It's just thing, the snap thing that come into your mind, like realising these officers were all together having a bit of a conference and that kind of thing, you see.
Did you have much time to be afraid?
Well, I wasn't afraid then, and that was the funny thing about it. I'd been petrified when I was down in the dilly and telling them we were going to be attacked and nobody would take any notice. And then when I looked and first light came and saw these people advancing on us, then I was petrified, really. But not too much feared, because I was prepared to take them on. You see, I was going to start the war all on myself. You see, I said, shall we open up? Because, well, it's only the natural thing for to do. And the colour sergeant that I've already said, he said, well, no, he said, it's no good opening up here. He said, we cannot do much good. He said, well, the next time they put the smoke down, he said, make your way back over to the ridge, you see. So he must have known they were there.
At that point, when... before you got back over the ridge, had there been any action in front of you which would indicate that the companies were involved?
No, I'd never saw any action, whether the companies had been in action or not. I never saw that at all, only what I've already said, that all through the night they were firing, and there were shells and tracer bullets and all kinds coming past me while I was wandering around on guard. So if that attacked, if the companies had been down in at the bottom of the valley and they might have been attacked during the night, and that's what probably had drawn my attention to it. But why hadn't the if they were getting attacked, why hadn't the sergeant major that was with me and the colour sergeant, they were just unconcerned?
Did you feel at all angry at their attitude when you felt that there was some cause for concern?
No, not really, because they said, well, it's only the Indians, you know. Yeah, I said they're giving orders in foreign languages, and the colour sergeant, I think it must have been a regular soldier or something, and he said it's the maybe the Indians giving orders in Hindustani. So... I just accepted that. And,
do you recall the name of the sergeant? Sir?
Well, it was Childs, I think, the colour sergeant. It was colour sergeant Childs. But he saved the situation afterwards, because if we'd start a fire from there, we definitely would have been taken out straight away, because there was only a handful of us, the colour sergeant, myself, and the driver that I can remember of the truck. He was Royal Army Service Corps. It wasn't one of our own drivers. I think the Royal Army Service Corps had brought us up into this position at Marath.
During the action, were you aware at any time of any men whose nerve went?
Well, not in that particular time, but I can tell you later on about when that did happen to a full corporal. But it wasn't in our battalion, it was in another battalion.
So you didn't see Wakenshaw get his VC?
No, I didn't see Wakenshaw. My friend was on the machine gun, Henry Pinches. He was the one that was to support the gun. And it was Henry Pinches that gave he saw what happened and gave all the doing. I never saw anything that happened down to the companies or anything, other than seeing them marched out. The A Company, I saw Major White of A Company, he was out with them as well, and I didn't see any more officers getting taken, but there was at least the three separate lots of people, which I said, well, the three companies had been overpowered and they were given in.
What happened next then after you got on the truck?
Well, I must compliment the driver of that truck, because the stuff was flying about all over, and you see these lads, they just we were down and covering, you know, any cover you can get from the side of the truck, but the driver has to drive on, you think about these things. And anyway, he got us out. I can remember seeing a carrier sergeant coming out on our left. He was making way down as well. So when we got clear of the firing and we got down, and I think it must have been divisional headquarters. And when we got to headquarters, there was one of the brass hats come across, and he said, "What's happened? Where are you from?" You know, told him, 9th Day Ally. He said, "Where's the 9th Day Ally now?" I said, "Well, this is it." There was a truckload of people. Of course, to me, that's all that was left of the 9th Battalion DLI. He said, "Don't be foolish." And I told him the story. I said, "Well, I've seen all the companies taken." And I said, "I've left headquarter company." And I said, "I'm sure they'll have been taken as well." So we unloaded the truck, he said, and we unloaded the truck. And there was one lad that had been killed, and they were shouting for somebody to get him off the truck, and the lads didn't have a stomach for it. You see, that some of them had had enough, and some of them didn't like the idea or thing. But I said to them, on the two that were on the truck, I said, "Well, if you hand them out to me, I'll take them." See, I was there on my own, and they handed them out, and I think he'd been hit with an anti-tank shell or something in the back, so they said. But when they lifted him down, I took his legs, the blood had been accumulating in the bottom of his KD pants, you know, and when they lifted his legs down, all the blood run down on top of me, down the front of me KD shirt, and I was in a right mess. But anyway, we got him down, and we wrapped him in a blanket, and we dug a hole for him, and we buried him. And there was a young Northumberland Fusilier officer was there as well when we dug the grave for him. And he took his identity discs off, and we just rigged a little bit of a cross for him, and he was laid there. So we marked the cross. Later on, I wrote to his wife, but I never, I knew where he lived. I can remember the address now. It was Murray, Pat Murray. He was one of the lads from Liverpool that had been drafted to us. And it was 12 Stitch Street in Liverpool. I can still remember the address, and I sent this letter off, but your letters were censored. They might have not been censored, they might have gone, but got sunk or something, but I never heard anything from them.
Any idea where you were at this time when you pulled back to this position?
I think we just must have been at maybe divisional headquarters, because the driver would know where he was going to. He'd come up, so he'd know where he was going to. So that's all I can think of.
Did it appear to be far away from your position that you'd been caught in?
Well, not too far. I would say about, we might have been travelling about 3/4 of an hour, maybe, you know. So I couldn't say. But anyway, the MO come round and checking on people that had been wounded, and he said, "What's the matter with you?" Well, to him, one must have appeared to be in a bad state, because I was covered from my shoulders right down to my pants. I was covered in blood. And I said, "I'm all right." I said, "I've just lifted a chap off the truck." And I said, "We're going to bury him now." I said, "I'm okay." I said, "I've been it, but," I said, "it's just my shoe. The toe of my shoe had been taken away." And he said, "Get your shoe off." I said, "I'm all right." I said, "Gotta work me to get it off." So I took it off and let him have a look at it, and there wasn't even a hole in my sock, so I put my shoe back on. And we got a cup of tea or something, and they said, "Go up and join the 6th Battalion." So there was somebody with a truck that must have known where the 6th Battalion were, and we all were loaded onto this truck, the one that were able-bodied, and we all went up and we joined the 6th Battalion.
How many was on the truck, Mr. Rogers?
Well, I think there would be about 20 able-bodied men who would start to go back to join the 6th Battalion.
And was that, as far as you knew, that was...
That was the 9th Battalion.
That was the 9th
Battalion. 9th Battalion, DLI, yeah, yeah. And as we were going up, everybody, all the trucks were coming down. Nothing was going up. And there was a sergeant on the truck, I'm a bit amazed, but he said, well, they said, Barmy, to, you know, go up there. And there were about four or five of them that dropped off the truck, and they didn't go. And I heard later, well, some of the lads asked me, I think I must have been the only NCO on the truck then. They said, what do you think we should do, Johnny? I said, well, we'll go over here, the Durhams. We're going up the Durhams. If you go back there, you don't know where you're going. So I said, I'm sticking it. I'm going up the Durhams. And some of them stuck with me, and some of them dropped off. But I heard later that some of them that dropped off got into a truck, and they were passing a railway station at Mortimer True, railway crossing. And they were all buried in one grave. The bomb dropped, and they were all... buried in one grave. However, we joined the 6th Battalion, and it was in a wadi, and it must have been the cookhouse, it might have been headquarter company. And I can remember we joined them, told them who we were, and one of the cooks gave me a tin of corned beef, and I didn't feel like eating anything then, but I took it and I pushed it into my blouse. Barefoot, eat it after. And I went up on the top, and there was some of the 6th DLI. They must have been protecting the headquarters. We weren't in the front at all. There was no firing. And we went up this bank and on the top of the ridge, and we took up position on there. And we weren't there very long. And somebody come and tapped me on the shoulder, and they said, we're moving out. So I hadn't been in action with the 6th DLI. But the 6th DLI might have been in action, I don't know, because the companies were all right out in front. So we started to move back down into the wadi again. And we got loaded up onto the trucks, and we moved out. And it was dark then, so I was dog tired. I'd had enough, and I just moved down the truck. And the next thing I realised was we stopped. The trucks had stopped, and we were free. We were away from the Germans, and we were in a safe area.